Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman. It's a pleasure to be with you once again. We are at NBA trade deadline eve 2021, but I'm also excited because a familiar voice that we've not heard from in a while. He's been a very busy man, but he's thankfully made time to join us for today's episode, and that is Grizzly Bear Blues site manager and the host of Grizzly Bear Blues Live, Joe Mullinax. Joe, how have you been, sir?
I can't stress this enough. I do not recommend being a football coach during NBA season in the spring. It's not ideal. It's not ideal towards running an NBA team blog in any way, shape, or form. But thankfully, I have you. I have Parker Fleming. I have Brandon Abraham. I have a tremendous staff over at GBB that's picking up my dead weight at the moment, these last couple of months. I'm still watching the games. I'm just not able to get into the features as much as I normally do. But the good news is my team that I am the coach of, the Brentsville Tigers, we are 4-0, and if we win on Friday night, we are district champions for the second season in a row. So shout out to the Brentsville Tigers, and hopefully we're able to get that done. And I look forward to, in these next few weeks or so, our season will end, this weird short spring season that I'm glad we get to play, because you want your seniors to have one last shot to have a chance to play high school ball. And I'll stop what I'm doing and focus back on the blog a little bit. And in 3 months, it'll be football season again, very strangely. So it's a weird year, but I'm thankful for the opportunity. It's better than the alternative, which obviously we've all experienced the alternative in the last year or so. And I'd much rather be doing this.
Agreed. And thankfully, in whatever shape or form, may work for those who are listening to us, whomever it may be. It seems like hopefully things are slowly but surely getting back to normal, whatever that new normal is, but at least as much back to normal as possible. But one thing that is nice to continue to be able to do is to talk Grizzlies basketball, and that's obviously why we have you on the show. You could follow the show at Locked On Grizz, myself at StatsSAC. Obviously, we will have Joe at the end of the show, let you know what he's got going on and where to follow his stuff. Some great stuff. Joe, I listened to your podcast, the GBB Live with Keith Smith, some really insightful info. Thank you for always providing. Those are great guests, really insightful stuff. And we'll get into some trade talks a little bit later in the show. But Joe, let's just start out straightforward. I kind of divided this season into three parts. Before we had the halt to the season on January 18th, from January 30th to when Justice Winslow came back, and now when Justice Winslow's come back, 15 games in. Just want to get your thoughts on this Grizzlies team. What stood out as a positive? What stood out as a negative? And, it seems like that this offense is certainly, despite last game, has certainly run into some tough times here recently.
It's crazy that Justice Winslow's played, or I guess he hasn't played in all 15 because he's not doing back-to-backs, but or at least he hasn't been doing back-to-backs. We're getting close to my 400-minute threshold, aren't we? And I feel like I'm going to owe everybody who follows me on Twitter and follows my work at GBB a mid-football season feature on, 400-minute takeaways from Justice. It hasn't been pretty on the offensive end. And I do think you can not draw a direct line because Justice Winslow isn't that important to the offense, but Justice has struggled, especially from three. And I think that the team as a whole has struggled offensively, not just from three, but in terms of, you wrote a great series of pieces about shot creation. They don't have very many guys that can do that, which is surprising because you'd think with the different types of ball handlers they have several guys who, theoretically speaking, should be able to do that more consistently than they are, and they're just not having success. It looks a lot like what we saw in the bubble once Jaren Jackson went down at times. And obviously Jaren hasn't played all year, and that makes some sense, but Jonas hasn't been himself at times. Obviously his double doubles continue to get racked up, but defensively he struggles. Defensively Ja Morant struggles, and I think that for a team like Memphis who doesn't have elite offensive talent, you have to have your defense feeding into your offense, and when they're at their best, that's exactly what happens. They create turnovers, deflections, and they get easy opportunities in transition, which is where Ja Morant clearly is at his very best. But at the same time, when they don't have those chances and they have to do so much in the half court and they don't have the opportunity to get out and run, they are much more limited. They just don't have the personnel right now. they're dependent too much on Jonas Valanciunas, Dylan Brooks, and to an extent, Ja Morant, to be honest with you. I know you've pointed this out multiple times. You know, Ja's shooting isn't just an issue from three. Ja is struggling offensively, and obviously the most recent game not necessarily included. But Ja has not been an effective scorer of the ball consistently throughout this year. You can make an argument that he has regressed in some ways offensively. So I do think you go as far as your best player in the NBA, and Ja Morant is pretty clearly at this stage the best player for the Grizzlies. And he just, ever since that ankle injury, has not fully been able to consistently be what Memphis needs him to be anything more than what they currently are, which is a mediocre basketball team. So you can point out the question of who should start at the two. You know, Desmond Bain hit a couple games of a cold stretch, and they replaced Desmond with Grayson Allen. DeAnthony Melton's not getting enough run. You know, there's lots of questions there, how that's all kind of fitting and working out. But I think it needs to start with Ja Morant. You know, when you're the superstar, when you're the guy that gets all the highlights and all the attention, you know, and I'm not saying Ja does this, because I think he is the opposite. Ja is his harshest critic, as you know from those media availabilities. Ja Morant understands that he needs to be better. You can't just enjoy the good times and then shove away the bad and say that those opinions, those bad shots, those tough defensive rotations don't matter. They matter very much. And when you're playing inconsistent basketball, you're going to be an inconsistent basketball team. And that's what the Memphis Grizzlies are. The good news, especially with Gorgui Dieng, it seems like whether it's by buyout or by trade, that Gorgui Dieng's not going to be on this team in the next few days. And I don't want to say good news because I like Gorgui. But my point is with that, once Gorgui Dieng is gone, this will officially be the youngest team in the NBA. And they are very firmly in the play-in picture in the Western Conference while they are in the midst of a full-blown rebuild. That is something to be proud of. The fact that they have put themselves in this position without their second-best player in Jaren Jackson Jr., that's a pretty remarkable thing to see play out. And Ja deserves credit for that, but the fact that they're inconsistent, a lot of that starts with Ja Morant as well.
Agree completely. It does start with Ja. And you've also seen a bit of regression, you know, that was expected from Kyle Anderson, you know, from others. You know, yes, Desmond Bane did, he kind of tailed off a little bit, but, you know, that happens when you're a rookie. You know, DeAnthony Melton, Grayson Allen, all of them have kind of stepped back a little bit, but that was expected. But I agree, it does start with Ja. But one thing I could say, especially through this stretch that we've had this week, where we played five of the, you know, five top 15 defenses in a row on four teams, the defense did stand out at times. It did what it needed to do with a little bit of luck against Miami, did what it needed to do against Golden State. But this defense, at times when it's both effectively defending the three and creating turnovers, in my opinion, it's easily a top 10 defense in the league. But there is some inconsistencies there. But I do think that you're seeing that there's multiple ways this defense can step up and make this team competitive to at least give them a chance to win. You know, the Bucks game and the Nuggets game this month show that as well. Your thoughts on the defense, and while it's inconsistent, I do think there's definitely plenty of quality depth there to make it an advantage on most nights against teams.
I believe that's fair. And again, we have a defense that is playing as well as they are as a team when the numbers would suggest that Ja Morant's one of the worst perimeter defenders in the NBA, or when, you know, the numbers don't necessarily suggest it as much, but your eyes can tell you that Jonas Valanciunas struggles in perimeter defense. The way they play drop coverage with him, you know, the Phoenix Suns completely crushed the Memphis Grizzlies for what they did to their Phoenix pick and roll game, and this ate them alive in the mid range. So that's part of that inconsistency. And the reason that they do well is, and it's a credit to that group of players, it's a credit to Taylor Jenkins and his staff, they've bought into the effort that playing good defense takes. You know, a lot of times playing or excelling defensively, it obviously starts with having length and understanding scheme and all of those things, but you just have to want it. And in that regard, on the defensive end, they have a pretty solid leader in Dylan Brooks. He's a guy who, for all his flaws, and he has plenty of flaws, he will play his ass off the entire time he's on the floor. He will happily take on the best player on the opposing team. He doesn't complain. He never gets too high or too low. He is someone that they can count on to be a productive force, especially defensively, And that matters so much for a young team, you know, especially for a group that is missing elder leadership. And Jonas, Kyle, you know, you don't know what these guys are saying and doing off the court, but on the court, it is very clear that for all the things that frustrate people about Dylan Brooks, he is one of their leaders. He is one of their guys that establishes that swagger, that the idea of what it means to be a Memphis Grizzly. A lot of that comes from Dylan Brooks, and it shines through defensively. These guys attack passing lanes. They deflect passes. They understand what they're supposed to do within the schemes of Taylor Jenkins. I do believe that De'Anthony Melton and Brandon Clark as reserves, dominating reserve units on a more consistent basis than the starters do against other starters, that obviously helps. The decision to go with Brandon Clark as the backup five, it allows for more switchability on the perimeter, better rim protection. Gorgui Dieng is not nearly as mobile as Brandon Clark is, so it makes your defense more malleable and also allows for you to get out and transition more and hopefully create more easy offensive opportunities for an offense that desperately needs them. So I do believe that one of the reasons you see a consistent defense, in spite of the fact that especially Ja, but like I said, I would argue, I know the numbers don't fully back it up, but just from watching the games, you know, Jonas is not a sound pick and roll defender. He and Ja get picked on pretty consistently at this point. On the other end, when it comes to the perimeter defense with Kyle Anderson, Dylan Brooks, you know, Desmond Bane does some solid things. Grayson Allen, one of the reasons that he gets played as much as he does is he defends the way Taylor Jenkins wants him to. He defends without fouling. You can't say that about Dylan Brooks. You definitely can't say that about Dylan Brooks. You can't say that about De'Anthony Melton consistently. But Grayson Allen does what Coach Jenkins wants him to do on both ends of the floor. And he has had a solid defensive season as well. So while Ja and Jonas, especially Ja, again, have had their issues defensively, it starts with Dylan Brooks, and they have enough other guys that are able to keep the ship afloat that those problems, if the offense were to come along a little bit better, wouldn't impact them as much as they have to this point.
I agree. There's a lot of good. You know, at the end of the day, when it comes to defense, especially, it's not like on offense where you're kind of hoping at some point you start to see, you know, positivity, and you hope this game against Boston certainly helps. There's a lot of good. It's just the consistency being there for it being good, especially when it comes to stopping the three, which I think is going to be the biggest step forward this team needs to make if they're going to do anything with their playoff potential this season. But there's some other interesting topics to certainly discuss as well, and I think that begins with who plays next to Ja at certain points of the game. Coming up, I'm going to get Joe's take on a subject that he certainly has focused on this year for good reason when we return. It's time once again for our Michelob Ultra Player of the Week, and our Michelob Ultra Player of the Week this week is none other than Dylan Brooks. And I'm going to be honest with you, it's based off one game. It's based off one game, the game on Monday against the Boston Celtics, in which Dylan had 24 points, 7 assists, and 7 rebounds. Listen, the man gives plenty of effort all the time, and he does it because he's happy to do that. It brings him joy to give the effort that he does on a consistent basis because he knows he makes a difference for him and his team. That's how he plays, 100% full energy all the time. And that joy allows for him to play with happiness. He's happy with who he plays with. He has a desire to be at his best. Dylan said before the season he wants to be an all-NBA defensive level player, and that's what brings him happiness because he knows when he's given full energy, that's when he's at his best. And it allowed for him to potentially have his best game in his career against Boston. It brings everybody enjoyment. When he is playing at full energy, it brings him enjoyment. It brings his teammates enjoyment. It sets a tone that makes this team different in terms of the fact that their energetic defense really allows for them at times to create offense as well. And when this team is playing energetic defense, that's when they're playing at their best, and that's what makes them most competitive. And the great thing about it is that when Dylan Brooks is playing this way, others, though they always play this way, all the team playing together at high energy, with intent, with activity, that's when they are having their most fun, and that's what allows for them to have the best chance to win. And what it comes down to is this, is that if you get enjoyment from what you do, you can honestly say that enjoyment isn't the end game, it's the whole game. Are you happy because you win, or do you win because you're happy? Dylan Brooks setting the tone for the rest of his team truly shows that when the Grizzlies win, it's because they're happy playing together and happy to play this style of basketball
basketball that Dylan embodies every time that he's out there. Well, I can tell you this, whether it be Joe, myself, or others, I certainly can say we also could tell you that what can bring enjoyment to your experience as a fan is an ice cold glass of Michelob Ultra. Only it's worth it. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. 2.6 carbs and 95 calories. Joy creates success. And if you can enjoy a nice glass of Michelob Ultra while watching the Grizzlies, hopefully they'll have success on the court from players like Dylan exerting great energy. And hopefully you'll be able to have success enjoying the game as a fan. Michelob Ultra. Are you happy because you win, or do you win because you're happy? Hopefully it's the latter. March Madness has returned, and Paramount Plus has the games you want to miss. Watch CBS games live on Paramount Plus, including the Final Four National Championship game on April 5th. Paramount Plus is also the home to year-round UEFA, Champions League and Europa League, the NFL, and more. Plus, get breaking news, expert picks, and highlights from all of your favorite teams. CBS Sport with CBS Sports HQ, a 24/7 sports news network. I can honestly say, from having watched CBS and Paramount, the setup is great. They do a great job of keeping you informed with news, but also making sure that the game is the central focus. Visit ParamountPlus.com before March 31st to receive a 1 month free trial of Paramount Plus. That's ParamountPlus.com to receive a 1 month free trial of Paramount Plus. ParamountPlus.com. Get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Joe. So, you know, we had an exchange coming into the second half of the season, kind of jokingly, I put out there that, you know, the starting lineup for the Grizzlies, in all honesty, had been, you know, numerically, from a ratings standpoint, one of the best starting lineups out there in the first half of the season. Ja, Grayson, Dylan, Kyle, and Jonas. But let's get right to it. That lineup, I think, what it comes down to is Taylor Jenkins really is committed to the idea of starting a shooter next to Ja. Grayson or Bane, it's been them as the options, as the preferred options. My thought process is he just likes the idea of getting off to a good defensive start to hopefully keep that role going throughout the game. But it's also clear that De'Anthony Melton is our most valuable two guard. And I think that Melton has played, probably not as much as he should have, but he has played, he's been used at times in high leverage situations in the fourth quarter. Your overall thoughts when it comes specifically to the two guard position of how that should look going forward?
Well, I'll answer your question, Sean, with a question. Is Grayson Allen a long-term member of this team, in your opinion, given all that we've seen? Because Grayson Allen, I feel like we have enough of a sample size at this point. You know, one of my goals for this season was figuring out who's going to be a part of this next great Grizzlies team. Considering the fact that Desmond Bane is on one of the most valuable contracts in the NBA as that 30th overall pick in the draft, they have him on a very team-friendly deal for the next several years. De'Anthony Melton, same idea. You could argue he's the best free agent signing of this past offseason. Considering all that, is Grayson Allen realistically going to be on this team longer than De'Anthony Melton or Desmond Bane?
No. I think that's a wholehearted no.
So that's my answer. That's my entire point, okay? And I said in the first segment that you are looking at a team that is in the midst of a rebuild. And this front office talks about all the time, Zach Kleiman talks about all the time, having a long view. That's one of the reasons we renamed our full recap. I know you know that, Sean, is the long view, right? That's what Parker focuses on with his work over at the blog when it comes to game coverage when I'm not in the middle of a random spring football season. He prioritizes focusing on the long view because sustained success is their goal and they're trying to figure out who fits long term. Grayson Allen, compared to what is currently on the roster, does not fit long term. He just doesn't. And because of that, I don't think he should be invested in, especially considering the fact that they have Desmond Bane, who is an elite three-point shooter. You know, Grayson has had a good year, season shooting the three. Desmond Bane is elite. We can say that beyond a shadow of a doubt at this point. Does Bane have his flaws? Absolutely, he has his flaws. He's a rookie. He's catching up to the speed of the NBA. But he is an elite three-point shooter, and he's going to be around a while. De'Anthony Melton, theoretically, could be around a while. Now, you look at De'Anthony Melton's contract. You look at how he's 22 years old. You could think about it on the other side of the coin, Sean, and say, De'Anthony Melton might be one of the most valuable trade pieces in the entire NBA. You talk about cost-controlled, solid defense. He's clearly improved as a shooter. I'm not advocating for trading De'Anthony Melton. I think that would be crazy. On the flip side of what I'm trying to say about Grayson, you could make an argument that Melton could be someone who would be valuable in a trade if you're trying to go get a, hypothetically speaking, I know we'll talk about this in the next segment, Malcolm Brogdon, randomly. I don't know why Indiana would trade him, but even if he's available, would I trade De'Anthony Melton for Malcolm Brogdon? Yes. Yes, I would, because it's Malcolm Brogdon. So I do think that there is an air of that to this, the idea of the next great Grizzlies team. And I tweeted this out. I think that this is the first example of the front office and the coaching staff not being simpatico, not being in the same lockstep that they talk about all the time. I believe that this front office clearly values Desmond Bane, and they clearly value De'Anthony Melton. And Grayson Allen is somebody who is playing well, doing what Taylor Jenkins wants him to do. Grayson Allen is essentially being Jay Crowder better than Jay Crowder was. Grayson shoots a ton of threes, and he's converting them better than Jay Crowder ever did. And he's defending better than Jay Crowder did, especially in terms of not fouling while he defends. Those are two things that Jenkins clearly focuses on, and Grayson Allen listens. So I can understand from a coach's perspective, you want to play the guy who best executes your vision for what success is. But at the same time, in the long run, in the long view, Grayson Allen is not a long-term piece on this team. Grayson Allen is somebody who will likely be put in as trade fodder, sent to someone who is willing to spend $6 or $7 million, because that's what it's probably going to cost to retain Grayson Allen in the next year or so. And I'm not convinced that the Grizzlies are convinced in, or that the Grizzlies want to do that, especially considering they have Melton and Bane locked up to pretty team friendly deals already. So, and John Conchar to put on top of that. So I'm not advocating for Conchar over Allen, because I think Allen's a better basketball player. But the fact remains that Grayson Allen, because of his age, because of the fact he is coming up on his extension, just like Jaren Jackson Jr. is. They were in the same draft, I believe. You are dealing with a player who does not have the same long-term value that De'Anthony Melton and Desmond Bane do. And they are not getting the investment, or at least Melton especially. You could argue Bane was given an opportunity and he struggled. Melton especially has not been given the chance to fully show what he is capable of in that starting role. He continues to go to Grayson Allen, and I think that in starting is something that you and I can debate. It matters and it doesn't matter. Who closes games, certainly you could argue, matters more. Melton having a consistent role in terms of minutes matters more. But Sean, he doesn't have that right now. He doesn't have consistent minutes right now. So to me, it goes even beyond the starting question. It goes into who should have a steady rotation role, whether he's coming off the bench or as a starter. And Grayson is eating into that for De'Anthony Melton. And I really struggle with that, because you can watch the games, you can look at the numbers. De'Anthony Melton is one of the most impactful players on this team. And he's not getting the run that he's supposed to get because of some vision of what Taylor Jenkins thinks Grayson Allen brings to the party. And again, in terms of his schemes and in terms of what Jenkins values, because again, he started Jay Crowder for months ahead of Kyle Anderson. He clearly values a certain style of play, and Grayson Allen understands his way to get on the floor, and more power to him. It's not Grayson Allen's fault. It's the fact that Jenkins is focusing on that particular aspect, and it's not what is best for the team long-term. And you can argue it's not best for them in the short term either. And I struggle with that particular instance. I think Taylor has done some good things. We mentioned the Brandon Clark at the five. I think that's a good switch. I think he's allowing Kyle Anderson to play the four more, which is a good switch. But this is just one area where he really likes Grayson Allen, and coaches all have their guys. This is just an interesting guy to latch onto, considering that he's probably not in the long-term plans of the front office.
I agree with you. And I think that that is, you know, a bit of a flaw. Yeah, it's fine to be critical of Taylor Jenkins. At the end of the day, he's done excellent work. And a point that you made about DeAnthony Melton, we'll get to in the next segment. But I do, you know, we're talking about the backcourt. Obviously, you're going to have Ja and Tyus running the point for 40 minutes. Talk about the two guard. But wanted to get you to elaborate just a little bit more. I think that, yes, while he probably has not handled the Melton, Grayson, Bane situation that well, I do think that he's handled the front court quite well. Obviously, Dylan at the three has been added value to him this year. And I think that going, you know, knowing when to balance Jonas, using Jonas for his abilities, except for last game, in my opinion, but also knowing when to feature Justice or Kyle at the four instead of the three and going with BC at the five, I think generally Coach Jenkins has done pretty well when it comes to balancing the front court and using that to get at least the stops when he needs them in critical moments of games this season.
Especially considering he hasn't had Jaren Jackson Jr. all year, right? I think that's a fair point. And like you said, Taylor Jenkins has forgotten more about basketball than I'll ever know. You know, I'm a guy that runs a blog and has done it for a little while and played basketball for a little while. I don't have the pedigree that Coach Jenkins has. I just, you know, go off of what I see and pontificate on blogs and podcasts. I do think that you look at the front court and the way that he's managed it, and he's realized that it's a larger scale thing with the NBA in general. You're not going to have the issue of needing two bigs very often, right? Like, who are the teams off the top of your head that have two dominant bigs that you have to have two true big men in there? Like maybe the Lakers, I guess Philly can do it from time to time, depending on how you view Tobias Harris. You know, there's some teams that have that capacity, but at the same time, most teams in the NBA now have one true big or zero true bigs. Even their true bigs go out and they space the floor more than say Jonas does. So you don't need that much beef on a nightly basis in the NBA anymore. And I think Jenkins has adapted to that. He's prioritized having someone like Kyle Anderson in that role, which I think is so valuable because of what Anderson can do in terms of his switchability, versatility defensively. He can literally defend all five positions on the floor. Having him as your four, to me, is extremely advantageous. It makes you much more difficult to prep for as an opposing offensive coach, trying to figure out how you're going to create space for your shooters, your dribble penetration. You know, Anderson can be a matchup issue. And the same thing with Justice Winslow. For all his offensive issues, he has defensively looked almost as good as he was in Miami. And we have to remember he hasn't played basketball in over a year, at least on a consistent basis. So this is his first consistent ball he's played in well over a calendar year. You have to have patience with him on the offensive end and be optimistic given what you've seen defensively. So I do think that his willingness to adapt and understand that there has to be changes that are made at times. You need to shake things up and get different energy flowing. He's done that especially well in the front court. I'm not so sure he's given that full opportunity in the back court, like we mentioned earlier. But the front court, I would agree with you. I think that he's done a solid job. I think he better understands now that Brandon Clark, while he has done better as a starter this season, the best value of Clark still at this point is as a reserve. Him and Melton coming off the bench, that might be part of his logic too, is those two are a force of nature when they come in together as reserves. And Tyus Jones, to a lesser extent, fits into that as well. So I do think that there is a method to the madness. I don't agree with every step that he takes, but especially with those bigs, those forwards, he has the right idea in terms of trying to maximize their ability. And again, one of the stated goals for me this entire season is finding the best ways to fit guys around Ja Morant. And whether it's Jonas Valanciunas as a screen setter and a pick and roll player, whether it is having Justice Winslow and Kyle Anderson be secondary facilitators, allowing ball to create off the dribble a little bit more, he's been experimental in that way. And that data accumulation that we talked about at the beginning of the year, that has definitely been lived up to when it comes to those front court players and how they best align with what Morant does well.
My question to Joe here when we come back from our break is, when will we go from data accumulation to aggressive moves for this team when it comes to adding to this roster going forward? Coming up, we'll get into some fun trade talk with Joel Mullinax.
We've been telling you for a while about Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar on the market for a while. Built Bar is the amazing low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber, amazing-tasting protein bar with 100% chocolate on all bars. Now is the time to find out which Built Bar is the best. It's Built Bar March Madness. Over 18 different flavors to choose from at Built Bar, but there is awesome opportunity for you to be able to choose which one makes the most sense for you in the Built Bar March Madness tournament. Today's matchup is cookies and cream versus coconut almond. And I can tell you this, it's cookies and cream for me just simply because it's a great taste to start your day off right. Go to BillBar.com or at bar_Bill on Twitter. Remember to use the promo code LOCK15 to get 15% off your next order. That is LOCK15 to get 15% off your next order at BillBar.com. And check back to see who won today's matchup and who will become the best tasting protein bar in Built Bar March Madness. Both in the men's and women's NCAA tournaments, the Sweet 16 teams are known. And if part of your fun as a fan is betting and wagering on sports, I've got a great opportunity for you, and that's BetOnline.ag. BetOnline.ag, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports actions. Whether it's March Madness, the NBA, the NHL, baseball around the corner, UFC, whatever you like to cheer for when it comes to sports. And if you like to wager and bet on those sports, BetOnline has you covered. It even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds. It props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the new scores and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. And if you use the promo code LOCKEDON when you head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today, you'll receive your 50% welcome bonus, again using the promo code LOCKEDON with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbooks experts. Get more analysis on the top prospects available in this year's NBA Draft and with the Locked On NBA Draft Podcast. Scouting reports, draft rumors, mock drafts, and full coverage of March Madness 4 days a week from credentialed draft experts. Subscribe today and follow Locked On NBA Draft.
Now, Joe, you brought up a very interesting point about DeAnthony Melton that I actually posed to John Hollinger last week. I asked him, do we feel that DeAnthony Melton could potentially be, while he's probably one of the top five most valuable players on the Grizzlies, without a doubt, but could he potentially be their best trade chip if they view Clark as untouchable? And his response was, he could, but the thing is do the Grizzlies trade him before the end of the season? He doesn't know, because he doesn't know if the rest of the league is going to truly value him for what the Grizzlies do. And this is coming from a guy that values Melton highly himself. So the best way for me to word it is this. Over the next 12 months for you, Joe Mullinax, do you feel that it's going to be the right time over the next 12 months for the Grizzlies to take two of the three of Bane, Melton, and Clark, who I feel most people would say are the 3, 4, and 5 most valuable guys to the future of our current roster, to take two of those guys plus multiple picks, make that type of commitment to a move, to get a star potentially? Do you feel that the right time for that to happen will come up in the next 12 months?
I don't necessarily agree with the players that you listed, but I do think the time for that kind of move is coming. I think that we're reaching the end of that data accumulation period. And obviously it coincides with the end of the season. If the Grizzlies don't make the playoffs, as you and I have talked about before, I don't want to say I don't care, because obviously I want the Grizzlies to be successful, but in the grand scheme of things, I don't care. Like, that means they're a lottery talent team. That means they have a chance to get a high draft pick. That means that they add more athleticism, more shooting, whatever direction they want to go in. They have a lottery pick to do it alongside Jaren and Jaw in a group that's already pretty young and pretty talented. So that's a fine outcome. If they make the playoffs, that's fantastic. This is one of the youngest teams in the NBA, like we mentioned earlier. They get valuable postseason experience. That's wonderful, too. Not many teams can say that they made the playoffs or the play-in at the very least in the 2 years of their rebuild. But the time is coming, Sean, where that's not going to be good enough. And they need to show growth with Ja Morant. They need to show playoff contention. They need to show the capacity to be building towards that next great Grizzlies team that's in the mix for Western Conference Finals and being competitive as one of the top 4 or 5 teams in the NBA. That is closer than people realize. And I do think that they need a trade to be able to pull off such a thing. Now, what does that mean? That means that they're going to have to give up on a Brandon Clark or a DeAnthony Melton or a Desmond Bane. I would say you could probably find, depending on the partner, it only takes one team. You know, Kyle Anderson's deal is going to be expiring soon. You could obviously take advantage of Gorgui Dieng's expiring contract. You could opt in to Justice Winslow's $13 million team option, and he become an expiring contract for an opposing team to try to get a contract off of their books. There's different ways of getting there, and I think that that draft pick capital is important because, you know, that Utah Jazz pick doesn't look as good as it did a year ago. I mean, the Jazz are one of the best teams in the NBA, and as long as they're able to keep the crew together, maybe re-sign Conley to a team-friendly deal, I could see them being pretty darn good next season too. The Warriors pick looks more attractive maybe than it has in the past, given the fact that you have no idea what Golden State's going to look like. Are they going to, you know, trade away the Wisemans of the world and other draft assets because they have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green under contract? Or are they going to rebuild and blow it up themselves? I don't necessarily see that happening, but I mean, there's uncertainty there. And that Golden State pick looms large in terms of long-term value. And obviously Memphis has all their own picks. They can protect them. Memphis has been very willing to deal their second round picks to get what they want. Will they eventually extend that hand with first round picks? So I don't necessarily see them being active this deadline. I believe I saw Matt Hardlicka, and I know you've talked about this. I think the most likely scenario is, you know, they'll be the third team on a trade and somebody will throw them a couple second round picks to replenish their war chest from the moves they made to acquire Bane and Xavier Tillman. I could see that happening. You know, give me a couple of seconds and we'll take on this deal and help you facilitate this aspect of what you're trying to do. That would make sense. Beyond that, I don't think this is the time for them to do this because, again, if they just bring Jaren into the fold eventually, assuming they do, and that's the topic for a whole other podcast probably, assuming they bring Jaren into the fold, that can be their acquisition basically, and they go play in the play-in and let the chips fall where they may. They're pretty solidly ahead of their next closest competitor for that play-in spot. I believe it's number 10 that they currently reside in, and I think the next closest team is 4 games back, something along those lines. So they're pretty solidly there. As long as they don't collapse, I don't see the Grizzlies missing out on the play-in. They can do that without doing anything, and I don't think they're going to force their hand. But this team, as we've seen offensively, they do not have the pull-up three-point shooting, the offensive creation off the dribble, as you've written about recently. They don't have that on the roster right now. It's not there. They don't have it. They don't have guys. Even the ones that do have it to an extent, like a Dylan Brooks, they don't have it for the role that they're being asked to execute. And they need another guy who can be that dude next to John Morant, next to Jaren Jackson Jr., on the perimeter that can be that scorer. Who is it? I mean, we've been prognosticating about that for months now. But at the same time, whether it's the draft, and I personally, Sean, think that might be the best way for them to do it. That big move that we're talking about could be for them to move up from 12th in the lottery to third. And they throw a couple of firsts at one of these teams that is up there in the top five. They really like Jalen Suggs, or they really like, you know, Jalen Green, you know, one of these guards that they think can really be that next piece. And they're willing to give up some of that draft capital and a young prospect or player, and they just move up in the draft to go get that guy. I think that's something that they could do too. It doesn't necessarily need to be a Zach LaVine or a Bradley Beal or a Malcolm Brogdon. I don't think Brogdon's available, but if he was, it doesn't have to be that kind of party. They can do this similar kind of concept and make that final move through the draft and say, okay, now we've got our three guys that we're locked into thanks to restricted free agency for the next 6 or 7 years. Let's build this up and let's go make a run at this over these next few seasons. I could see that being an option they go with too. The thing that's fascinating about the Grizzlies, Sean, and I know you know this, they can do whatever the hell they want, right? If they want to go make a big move, a big splash, they can do it. If they want to prioritize the draft, they can do it. They can go about this in whatever way they see fit. And that has been one of the priorities of them, is to have that flexibility. But the time is coming for them to show their hand. They haven't done that yet, right? We're not exactly sure what they see themselves as beyond this season, but we're about to find out. And this trade deadline could be a window into that. If they're willing to trade De'Anthony Melton, that tells you all you need to know about my theory that the front office and the coaching staff isn't in line together about Grayson Allen. If Melton's the guy that gets traded, then yeah, they are in line. And they essentially signed Melton just because they didn't want to let a 22-year-old talented player go walk for nothing, which in theory is smart front officing, but I would rather see Melton playing for the Grizzlies at this stage. So you have to give up something to get something. And that, you know, somebody on Twitter said something today that I'm really thankful that they said, whenever you put on your GM hat and you have these conversations, you have to put the personal stuff aside. Like, I don't dislike Brandon Clark. I don't dislike D'Anthony Melton. I don't dislike Desmond Bane. I love Desmond Bane. He's one of my favorite players. But if the Indiana Pacers called us, Sean, tomorrow, if you and I were co-GM of the Memphis Grizzlies, and they said, we want Brandon Clark, Gorgui Dieng, and D'Anthony Melton in 2 first-round picks in exchange for Sabonis and Malcolm Brogdon, I'm probably doing that trade, Sean. I don't know about you, but I'm at least very seriously considering it, because that gives you Ja and Jaren and Sabonis and Brogdon. That is a pretty solid foursome moving forward, and you're going to have to make that kind of move to take the next step. I think that this group has a pretty defined ceiling in terms of what they're capable of, and I think they're approaching it. They have the resources at their disposal to be able to break that ceiling and move to the next tier. They just have to be willing to pull the trigger, and I think they're getting closer to that. It's probably not going to come in the next 24 to 48 hours, but it is something that I think in the next 12 months the Grizzlies will show their hand and will have a better understanding of what the next great Grizzlies team, what that third player on that roster is going to look like.
And the thing, and all that Joe said is why I ask him the questions, is because it's wonderful insight from years of experience of covering this. But I think that Joe will back this up as well. If we go back to 2019, there were rumors about Conley being traded at the deadline. Utah, the big player in that. Discussions that happened at the trade deadline likely laid the groundwork for the very beneficial trade that eventually happened in June instead of February. Just because a deal doesn't happen right now, I do think that there have been conversations that have been had. That's one thing that we've seen a few guys say, is that while there's probably not a big move coming, the Grizzlies have worked the phones at the very least. Joe, I think you would agree there is some groundwork being laid for potential moves down the road, and that's why it's good to have a competent front office to get some knowledge now to make things more advantageous for them later on. Would you agree with that?
Sean, absolutely. My big prediction for this trade deadline is the Grizzlies are going to be involved in more than one rumor. Like, they are going to be brought up as a team that is calling around, getting feelers, and they're not necessarily trying to get Zach LaVine or Bradley Beal or Buddy Hield or any of these names that we've talked about in the past. They're just trying to find ways to, like I said, add a second round pick here, add an asset there, get Gorgui Dieng on a contender. You know, that they're going to be doing those types of deals, those types of moves. I don't think they're going to be inactive. On the contrary, I think they're going to be on the phone, Zach Kleiman, Tayshaun Prince, you know, Rich Cho. I think those guys are going to be pretty active going into this trade deadline here in the next day or so. But I do have an understanding of what they're trying to do. I know you do as well. You've written about it very well for us over at GBB. They are definitely building up to something. Is now the time to pull the trigger for that, especially considering the uncertainty surrounding Jaren Jackson Jr. and his health? Now's probably not the time. You are competing for a play-in spot given the current circumstance and the current way things are going. That's a good goal for this team. That was where I had them going into the season. I think you were in a similar boat to me. I predicted that they would be the 10th seed in the Western Conference. And given the new structure of things, that puts you in the play-in, that gives you an opportunity to play meaningful basketball in late April and early May in this weird season. And that's all you can ask for such a young team. So I do believe that they will be active. I think rumors will pop up. We'll get a couple of Woj bombs that the Grizzlies are interested in adding on as a third team. It may or may not materialize. But like you said, they are having conversations not just about, hey, what do you want to do in the next 48 hours? They're having conversations about, hey, what do you want to do between now and next October, November? Because that is when teams have greater cap flexibility. That is when, you know, the salary cap adjusts. Obviously, the draft comes and goes. You know, there's more opportunities for movement beyond just the trade deadline. And I do think that is something that is very possible to happen is those conversations come to fruition later than, you know, Thursday at 4 o'clock Eastern time.
And the good thing is that we're now coming up on 2 years of operating with the new front office where there's not a lot of information out there and patience is required. And so far, it's certainly has worked out for us. Joe, can't thank you enough for spending some time. Real quickly, want to give you the opportunity to let folks know what's going on. I know that you yourself are busy, but we've got some great stuff going on at GBB. Where can folks find you? Any opportunities coming up on the podcast here soon that you might want to speak about? Just anything you got going on, and where can folks find your great work?
Oh, sure. I'm Joe Mullinax at Joe Mullinax on Twitter. I'm site manager over at SBN Grizzlies. That's GBB's Twitter handle. As Sean alluded to, I'm not writing as much as I normally do, but Parker Fleming, Brandon Abraham, you know, Sean himself, Brendan Smart, Jesse Cinquini, I know I'm going to leave people out, Nate Chester, you know, we just have a tremendous staff over there at GBB, and we have a lot of talented folks that are taking advantage of opportunities, and the blog keeps rolling. It keeps grinding along even without me being as active due to my current schedule. I'll keep doing the game coverage. I'll do GBB Live when I can, and in the next month or so, the season will end, and I'll be able to get back on the NBA grind heading into the playoff push, which is good. That'll be convenient timing. But, you know, it's something that I'm very grateful for our blog and for our staff. You know, there's lots of talented folks that cover the Grizzlies, follow the Grizzlies. What makes GBB unique is, you know, I'm kind of out at the front when it comes to being the site manager, but GBB is a team. You know, we have a team of folks that are committed to covering the team as best we can. And I would argue nobody covers the Memphis Grizzlies in the entire organization the way that we do at GBB. Sean, obviously, you're a big part of that. I mentioned Brandon and Parker, and there's so many other folks. You know, even with me being a little less active this next month or so, there's plenty of reasons to go and make GBB a part of your experience daily covering the Grizzlies.
And you've done great work for years. I agree. GBB is a great thing to be a part of. It's led to many opportunities for me personally, as well as many others as well. It's just it's a very good opportunity to be a part of, and it's just a lot of fun to do it with the folks that we do it with. But for Joe,
yeah, you're best friends with John Hollinger now. How about that? You and Johnny H. You got him on speed dial, man. How about that?
It was fun to speak with him. I will say that. But all joking aside, Joe, it's always been a pleasure to have you here. We will have you again soon, obviously, schedule willing on your end. But for Joe Mullinax, my name is Sean Coleman. Again, you can find the show at Locked On Grizz, myself at StatsSAC. You can find the podcast wherever podcasts are available, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever it may be that you choose to listen to your podcast. Make sure you subscribe to GBB, the Grizzly Bear Blues Podcast Network, as well as us here at Locked On Grizzlies. For Joe Mullinax, my name is Sean Coleman. We'll talk to you again soon here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast.